I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. On today's show, I'll talk to Lita Sedaris, a one-time Hollywood studio attorney who's branched out into mystery writing with her first novel, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters. Stick around. Somebody is dead when the book starts, and snooping around is liable to get an amateur private eye in a world of hurt by the end. Here's a great title for a mystery novel, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters. It's writer Lita Sedaris' first crack at fiction writing, and the former Hollywood studio attorney certainly promises a lot right up front. The good news is that she delivers a fun, frothy read with lots of kooky showbiz types circling our heroine, amateur sleuth Corey Locke. You might say I came for the title and stayed for the characterization, as Sedaris moves the story along with a cast of characters straight out of central casting and plot twists that would be unlikely to be found in a book set in, well, Des Moines. Sedaris started her career as a law clerk for the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, and later worked as a business affairs director at Laura Martella Pictures, which is curiously hyphenated like Keith Amara Pictures in her novel. I'm sure there's no connection. She currently works as executive director for a legal nonprofit organization and writes on the side. Lita Sedaris, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'm very happy to be here.
Delighted to have you. As I said, I love the title of your book, and I wondered at what point did it suggest itself?
Immediately. It was right after my first draft, right after I'd completed it, that I thought of this title. It really just kind of popped into my head. There's murder, obviously, in the book. And a lot of disasters that I looked upon as unnatural. So it seemed like a logical title for my book. And as a matter of fact, after I sent out my first draft, I was in such a hurry to get it out there. I was so ecstatic of having written 90,000 words. I sent it to a handful of New York agents, most of whom ignored me, except for one. And that one responded that the only thing he liked about my book was the title.
Oh, that's mean.
It was the first draft. It was well deserved.
It's still mean.
it forced me to revise and revise and to get it to where it was something that could be sent out and actually published.
Did you ever wind up dealing with that agent again?
No.
And probably just as well. I mean, now, you know, near as I can tell, you've spent your entire life in Southern California. So
yes.
I hope I didn't offend you by suggesting that your characters are pretty kooky. But I'm thinking maybe that's just normal for SoCal and Hollywood.
They are kooky, and it is normal. And I'm glad you caught that, because that's exactly how I wanted them to behave in the book. So I accomplished that, and thank you for that.
Because your hero, Corey, is kind of the, you know, she's at the center of this hurricane of craziness. I mean, the most normal person around her seems to be the former security guard from across the street, who she doesn't seem to know if she really wants hanging around her or not. Ultimately, she does, but you know, it's kind of like, okay, you may be the most rational person here, but you're a little weird too.
Yeah. I was going for weird because I wanted to entertain. I wasn't trying to win the Pulitzer. I just wanted to entertain the readers with escapades that they wouldn't find in their typical days. I was trying to entertain myself, too, because my job, my day job, can be a bit intense. So this was an escape hatch for me, carved with words, with a bunch of zany characters and odd situations and just action and adventure the whole way. And that's what I, again, tried to accomplish.
Well, speaking of your day job, is it the same day job that you have now that you had when you wrote the book? Or
yes.
Okay.
It is.
And you're executive director of?
A county bar association.
Okay. So you're dealing with legal issues and lawyers and judges and all kinds.
Every day.
Of great fun. Yeah. Maybe. And I'm sure you love your job and you wouldn't have it any other way, but it could probably be a little dry and colorless on certain days.
There's a lot of wear and tear to it, and I think most people feel a lot of wear and tear with their day job. So again, this was an entertaining escape for me, and I hope for the reader as well.
And Okay, so back to the book for a second. It tells the story of a suspicious suicide inside the ranks of this fictional studio. Now, I use the term fictional kind of loosely, so I wondered how closely does the setting and descriptions of Keith Ameripictures mirror your actual experiences at Lorimar?
Well, the skeleton is there. I started out actually with the first draft being almost totally autobiographical, and I kept dozing off. It was terrible. My first chapter of my first draft had my heroine on the freeway driving to her job in Orange County and getting a speeding ticket, which is what happened to me. And so again, I was dozing off while I was writing that, so I had to keep, I had to go fictional. And so I did, and the only thing that remains again are the fact that I did work for the production arm of a major motion picture studio in Orange County, as my heroine does as well. And I did have these bosses, but none of them were quite as colorful as the bosses in my book. I drove the same type of car at the time. I lived in the same place that she did it. She lives in Hermosa Beach, California. So all the bones were there, but everything else was completely fabricated based on brief encounters I've had with maybe people in the past who had no clue that they'd be in my book. For example, this very morning we had a delivery lady deliver our newspaper, and I don't know her at all. I've never spoken to her, but I just had an impression of her, and I used her as one of the subplots in my book, the one that had the basketball player who lost his lucky charm.
Tommy and
Anyway,
Georgie.
yes, exactly. This was the woman. This is one of the Tish and Trish duo that were tied into Ty and Georgie. Anyway, she just delivers our newspaper, poor woman. And I took her and fleshed her out and turned her into the, put her into the book. So that's basically where my characters came from.
Does she know?
No, I'm half tempted to tell her. I don't know her that well, but you never know. I might just run up to her one day and hand her a copy of the
I would do
book.
that and see if she recognizes herself.
Good
I
idea.
might not tell her. I would just say,
Thank you.
maybe next time. Well, and legally you'll know better than I would, what the,
Right.
what the, but I would just, hand her the book and say, "Hey, I just thought maybe you'd enjoy this." And if she never reads it, you'll never hear anything. And if she reads it, she recognizes herself, you'll know, but
Well, impossible because I've never spoken a word to her other than thank you.
Oh, well then
So
you should be fine.
I will be
You should be
fine.
fine. Are there a lot of other people from your life that pop up in
Well,
recognizable
not
ways?
just again, there are very brief encounters. For example, the basketball legend. I was on the golf course once, and a basketball superstar asked if he could play through. And that was my only interaction with him, but he seemed so kind and so gentle and possibly a cat lover, so I threw him into the book as well.
And
So that
who was it?
it was Alonzo Mourning.
Oh, nice. Zoe. Very nice. All right. And so okay, because of the overlap between the book and your then job at Lorimar, two things. For people who are not in the industry, tell them what they would know Lorimar for, and then talk a little bit about what your job encompassed.
Well, back in the day, Lorimar was the front runner with TV shows. So Dallas, Knots Landing, Full House. I mean, that was all they did. But I didn't work for that division. I worked for the home video division, which is known for its Jane Fonda workout videos. And so what I did was I negotiated and drafted contracts on behalf of the studio with various talent, directors, writers. And that's what it entailed. I just thought it would be a fun backdrop because I couldn't recall a mystery that was placed in the entertainment industry that was certainly not lighthearted. I mean, like this one. So I thought it would be a fun, and it's what I knew. So I was writing what I knew. And I was removed enough from it where I could look at it objectively and turn it upside down and twist and turn events and come up with a mystery.
Now, in the book, your character Corey, who's the lawyer there, kind of representing you, deals with contracts for directors and folks that are for some of the worst products I have ever imagined. So I have to ask you, what were some of the, and this is years in the past, what were some of the worst Lorimar projects that you that came across your desk?
Well, I can't really name any, but there were some that I there was one in particular that I found embarrassing, but You may recall the scene where she gets the F-bomb tirade by, as I say in the book, a two-bit agent. That actually did happen. That's the only scene in the book that did happen to me. And it was right when I started there, and I was caught at a loss. I didn't know how to react because I hadn't done anything, never met the person, and he was just taking it out on me for something someone in the marketing department had done. So that was probably the worst thing that ever happened while I was there. And that's how I remembered it. And I thought, well, I'll just hit her with this too and see how she reacts.
Well, that's a good scene in the book too, because I think it's a great scene to recommend in the book, because it happens. Corey answers the phone and gets this tongue lashing, but from this person who she's never spoken to before, because it's her first day on the job, and lets the person get it all out, and then says, "Okay, you've never spoken to me before, so you couldn't possibly be that mad at me. Who are you mad at?" I like that. I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it
Thank
was good. Which reminds me, if I don't mention it again, so if someone's watching this and trying to decide whether to buy the book and read the book, whether in physical or as any book, if you go to Lita's website, litasedaris.com, you can actually listen to the first chapter. It's about 7 or 8 minutes of audio from the first chapter. It might be a fun way to just kind of get your feet wet and see if you like the book.
Thank you. It was fun for me to get my feet wet and read, because that's me reading the audio. So that was a lot of fun.
And did you do the complete audiobook, or is it just a chapter?
No, just the first chapter.
Okay, I wondered about that. All right, that was kind of interesting. So no one else has come to you and said, "Hey, I recognize myself in the book. How dare you?" Or "Thank you," or any of that kind of thing?
No, I've had people say, "Is there a me character in your book?" And I said, "Not unless you've done this and that," and they haven't. So I actually asked someone who worked closely with me at that time, and I said, "Does anything seem familiar to you?" And she said, "No, I can't remember most of the people, and I wish things like that had happened, but they didn't." So no.
Right. Well, and so how did you go from a legal career to starting to write? And I saw that you had won a scholarship at one point from the Mystery Writers Association, and you've done some magazine writing and some newspaper writing, but to actually tackle a novel, with this legal background and full-time, legal responsibilities. How did this come about? What interested you?
I've wanted to write a novel probably for about half a century. I've been wanting to do it, and it seemed daunting. So I did little pieces along the way, as you mentioned, articles and essays. And then finally, when my kids were out of the home, I thought, this is the time. This is the only time, but I didn't know what to write. So I pounded out a work of historical fiction and sent out the first chapter to for a contest sponsored by the San Francisco Writers Conference. You get a full ride if you won. And I won. And that's really what started it all. This was early 2012, because when I arrived at the conference, people actually thought I could write. So I thought, maybe I can do this. But so I started writing the chapters for that novel, but they made me depressed. Every chapter I kept saying, I can't do this, because if I feel depressed, my readers will feel depressed. I didn't want to do that to anyone. So I put that aside, and wandering down the halls of my office, everyone's a litigator in here, I'm not. I decided, well, let me just go back and write something that's legal related, but not quite. And so I thought, well, just throw a murder in there. It made sense, because everyone in the, it is a bit of a cannibalistic industry, the entertainment industry. So I thought it would be perfect. And a book was born. I really, all along the way, I'd get 15,000 words, and I thought, can I go on? It would be 35,000, 50, and then suddenly I had 90,000 words, and I was done.
I think you make a great point. I make my living writing nonfiction, and the biggest one of the best tips I think you can ever offer someone is, if you think it's boring, it's boring.
Yes, that's for sure.
If you don't find it interesting to read, don't hoist it upon unsuspecting readers. Fix it and make it so you're interested. If you're interested and you can be proud of it, other people will be. If you don't like it, stop right there. Don't do any more.
Very true.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And how is it rewarding for you to write? What do you like about it? What does it give you that you don't get in other parts of your day?
Bob, you can't see my feet right now, but they're not touching the ground. This whole adventure has been, I mean, it started out being surreal, and now it's just unbelievable. I'm having such a grand time. I love it. I I can't not write. It's not always easy. Right now I'm working on my second episode, my second installment in the series, and I'm having so much trouble with the first chapter, but I love every moment of it. So that's why I write. It just, it's like, you know, breathing or eating. I just can't do without it. I just thoroughly enjoy it.
Now, as for this whole thing about your feet not touching the ground, you know, it's probably just a little adjustment on the chair.
If only it was that easy, but no.
By the way, I gotta double back on something. You said a little while ago that this was something you wanted to do for half a century. Now, unless you are incredibly well preserved, I'm thinking that would mean you were thinking about this before you were born.
Yeah, exactly right. Probably in one of my past lives, right?
Yeah.
But I started out with poems. I won, I think, an honorable mention in some McCall contest when I was like 10 years old. And, you know, since then, I've just been writing all the time, but it never reached this point that it finally reached. So it's been a while. It's been a long while. I'm a late bloomer, Bob. What can I say?
Okay. All right. And where does the private eye part come in? Do you have any up close and personal experience with the private? I mean, Corey is the daughter of a famous PI in the book. Any of that in your family?
No, but I sure wish it was. It sounds like a lot of fun. I had my own small escapades. I think I mentioned on my website where I saw the case of the missing pet turtle, or we had an obscene phone caller when I was a teenager who kept calling. We couldn't get rid of him. The police could do nothing about it, but it really troubled me. So I tracked him down. I figured out who it was. So little things like that were fun. And I think everyone maybe has a little bit of a private eye inside of them. I just fleshed it out and turned it again into this book and the character's father.
So let me try to guess which was closer to a Nancy Drew mystery, the case of the missing turtle or the case of the obscene caller. Just checking. And have there been any particular writers or teachers that have influenced you either on the legal side or on the writing side over the years?
You know, I love Janet Ivanovich and her Stephanie Plum series because they give me it's just, again, pure entertainment. Many an air flight has gone by quickly thanks to my reading Stephanie Plum. I also enjoy the Alexander McCall Smith series, the number one ladies detective agency series that he wrote. I'm actually reading the latest one, installment right now. I love those books because after I'm done reading them, they give me a little lift. I feel better for having read them. And so that's what I want to, that was my objective with my own writing as well.
I actually had Alexander on the show a couple years ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, see, you're in. Wow. Now you're in that company.
Wow, I'm big time.
Yeah, I think it was tied to when the short-lived series based on the
right.
Yeah,
I love those books, love them.
And so with the book, are there, you know, a bunch of unpublished manuscripts in a drawer, or did you just start with this one and you just keep? You mentioned that you had to keep rewriting and rewriting.
Revising and revising, I should say, because just things didn't work for me, or as you said, they were too slow. Any unpublished manuscripts were not this one. I have the historical fiction that I don't know if I'll ever finish again because of the depressing aspect. And I wrote a nonfiction too that has to do with dealing with human nature. But I couldn't do that one either. I put that one aside as well because it was more negative than positive. So for now, I think I'll stick with the lighthearted mysteries.
Now, when I interview an author who's written fiction, I don't read to the end before the interview. So I don't know if Corey survives the book. I assume she probably does. But so I guess, you know, as we kind of wrap up, I'm wondering, will there be another Corey Locke mystery, or will you, you know, what are you going to do next?
I'm working on that currently, almost as we speak. But that's interesting that you said you haven't gotten to the end yet, because some people ask me, are these carefully outlined or plotted out? And absolutely not. I fly by the seat of my pants. I do everything, I'm afraid to say, by the seat of my pants. I don't think I've ever had a job for which I was qualified. But I was really surprised with who ended up being the perpetrator in the end of this book. And my first reader said the same thing too, because I felt, again, if I couldn't be surprised, would my reader be surprised? So I'm curious to see, Bob, if once you're finished, you'll have to tell me if that's what you were expecting.
Well, I'm curious to get to the end. It always drives me crazy. It drives me crazy when there's someone doing interviews of authors and they've read to the end and then they give away something that they shouldn't. So I've always tried not to do that. But on the flip side, I hate talking to someone like yourself and being where I am, which is about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way through, but I cannot bring myself to read to the end until after we do the interview. It's just kind of a safety feature of the show.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And by the way, you said that you don't think you've ever been qualified for any of the jobs you've held. You may want to re retract that statement, counselor, because I don't know how many years you've been in your current job, but they can always come around and want to
No
check your
one's
credentials.
complained. No one's complained. So I've got the legal degree. That one, that I have. But the jobs have always been a little bit different than what I've done just prior. And they've been okay because when, as we said, if when you're excited about something, you're bound to do it well because you're motivated.
All right. Well, that sounded like a little bit of Corey when you were talking too, because she doesn't seem entirely confident that she can that she has the qualifications for the job she has.
Right.
Especially when she references the law school she went to, you're thinking,
Well, that when I had the job at Laura Martello Pictures, I had worked in the entertainment industry. This was my second job, but the Alliance was something completely different. So I didn't know what I was doing, but I looked really good on paper, and that's probably why I got the job. And so they just assumed I knew what I was doing, but I was really so green that if I lied in a patch of grass, I'd be totally camouflaged. But it worked out because I think I am a fast learner. So within a few months, it was like I'd been there for years.
All right, so you look good on paper then, you look good on cam you look good on camera now, so I think you're pulling it off.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, well, folks, listen, you can find Lita Sedaris' first mystery novel, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters, in great stores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price on MrMedia.com. If you're familiar with the show, if you're watching on MrMedia.com on the website, either to the left or the right, underneath the video, you'll see the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. You can order it. My understanding is Amazon can deliver via drone in 30 minutes or less. That's what I hear. I don't know if it's true. And then, of course, you can get it as an ebook, or maybe they'll send it to you in a day or two. I'll let you work out the details. Lita, website is litasedaris.com,
Yes.
which is LidaSideris.com.
Perfect.
No relation to Amy or David, I'm assuming.
Nope.
Okay, just thought we'd check. And I know you're on Twitter and Facebook as well, so
Yes.
your fans can find you.
Yes.
All right. Well, it has been a pleasure reading the book. Very nice to meet you. You're charming,
Thank you.
quite charming. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you so much for including me, Bob.
Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of gun-toting gumshoes with no regard for their own health or welfare, let alone their mother's expensive wardrobe, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm hearing that. I don't know what that is. Like a thumping sound.